Welcome to the Fundraising Talent Podcast. I'm Kyla Daw, and I'm glad you decided to join us on today's episode of the show that is shaping how the nonprofit sector thinks about fundraising talent. Rather than advice from experts, our listeners want to hear the insights and ideas from those who, just like them, are on the front lines every day, building meaningful relationships that translate into meaningful support for causes that they and their donors care about. Every week, we invite our guests to have a real conversation about what it means to be a fundraising professional. We're after a greater understanding of what it means to be one of the sector's critically important yet least understood roles, while giving honest answers to our profession's most difficult questions. Thank you for joining us in this episode of the Fundraising Talent Podcast. Here's your host, author, fundraiser, and master trainer, Jason Lewis.
Hi, podcast listeners. This is Jason Lewis, and I am your host for the Fundraising Talent Podcast. Before I introduce today's guest, I do want to thank our sponsor, QBAC. QBAC is a next-generation advancement solution that reimagines alumni engagement to drive giving. QBAC doesn't just measure alumni engagement scores. It uses academic research in cognitive science and positive psychology to actually increase an alum's willingness to give. Quantitative data, such as capacity, gets a prospect into your pipeline, but qualitative data, such as impact stories, gets a prospect through your pipeline. QBAC's AI-driven system uncovers actionable insights and automatically delivers them to major gift officers for use and cultivation. Learn how to raise more money with less by going to www.qbac.com to schedule a free demo. I would also like to tell you about Responsive's training. If you're looking to align your entire team around a shared understanding of effective fundraising, let's talk about Responsive's four frameworks. If your culture doesn't feel right, before you begin any significant planning, launch a capital campaign, let's ensure that everyone is on the same page. How about inviting us to be on site with your board, leadership team, volunteers, and staff for your next planning event? If you prefer a virtual event, that'll work too. Let's get your team thinking critically and more carefully about the road ahead. Shoot me an email. I will also put some information in the show notes. Hi, Bill. I am delighted to have you today on today's episode of the Fundraising Talent Podcast. You and I have had a few minutes to familiarize ourselves with each other. Looks like we have some mutual friends over at Virtuous. I've been getting to know them for quite some time. We certainly share a common language, and our goal today is perhaps for you and me to share a little bit of a common language as well. Before we dive into whatever our topic of the day is going to be, how about you just introduce yourself to our listeners?
Yeah, my name is Bill Campbell. Been doing fundraising for pretty much all my career, except for an interest in technology as well. Right now, I'm working with United Way to roll out United Way in Atlanta to roll out Salesforce Philanthropy Cloud, which helps streamline corporate and nonprofit partnerships. And then I also work on a project focused on streamlining matching gifts for nonprofits, because that processing on the back end, if you're doing it right, can be difficult. And we're trying to take that work off of nonprofits' hands. And that organization or company is called Amply.
Cool. What's fundraising look like? And I've been doing some, as I shared with you a few minutes ago, I've been doing some fundraising in nearby Augusta, but I haven't done a lot of fundraising in Atlanta. What's fundraising look like in Atlanta in the last, say, 6 months, 12 months since we've been in the midst of this pandemic?
Yeah, it's an interesting time. I will say that Atlanta is both a large city and small town. So yeah. it's a small network of people. And what's great is when you're dealing with a crisis like COVID,
yeah,
people come together, right? So partnerships have been really key. It looks like at the United Way, they'll be hitting their fundraising goals this year, mainly because we are part of doing basic needs, but also that you got to tell what you're doing, right? You got to make sure that you're communicating how you're responding. And, you know, people who do basic needs can often do that during a crisis. But I think right now is actually an excellent time to really put your value prop out there, because people want to learn about, you know, how you're responding, how you're changing. And I think if they've never connected you about what you actually do as an organization, that they just get you in the mail, or they don't have a good understanding of how you've pivoted from your traditional way to your new way, you know, then they don't really know where to insert themselves. So in Atlanta, it's been good for us. And I think we've really strived and thrived on making partnerships, whether it's corporations, foundations, or other nonprofits. So
good. Well, that's encouraging. I am hearing a lot of my guests do tell me, whether on record or not, that they think that they're going to end up for 2020, they're going to end up pretty much in the black. It has certainly been a testing year, a learning year. I suspect you've probably learned, you guys have learned a few things at the United Way.
We did readjust as well. I mean, we didn't just keep everything, you know, we got tight on our budgeting.
Yes.
And we made adjustments, but it wasn't the way you thought the bottom could have fallen out, considering where we started in March. So
yeah. And I've heard similar United Way reports here. We've got some colleagues over in Berks County that just recently shared some really great news with their United Way chapter has done. So Bill, what are we going to usually I invite my guests to come on with a big idea or bold opinion. You and I haven't unpacked yours in much detail. So what you got for us?
Yeah. So my big idea is really where I want to see the sector go in some way. And for me, it's about leveraging all of the great assets and resources we have by breaking down some of the walls and concerns that exist in corporate and nonprofit partnerships.
Okay.
And I'll open it up this way. You know, as a nonprofit, you enter into a partnership with a corporation, especially if you're doing it through a platform like a Benevity, Eurocause, or Philanthropy Cloud, and you're often repeating your story and retelling your story.
Yeah.
And there's platforms like Candid out there or sure. GuideStar that do it, but they do it in a, I would say, a grant way.
Yeah.
And nonprofits have such great content and stories that live out there that are part of their fundraising asks are part of their communications by email. They build all that pretty naturally, and it's unfortunate whether it's a technology platform or a company that makes them rebuild that story every time they log on to a new place or space. So for me, the big idea is to create a place where it's definitely much more like a marketplace, but a place where all of those things can be leveraged. And, you know, maybe the big idea could be a technology, or maybe it could be nonprofits just being smarter, right? Like just looking across their organization, seeing the assets they have and not recreating the wheel every time someone asks them to build a profile. But the idea I'd really like to see out there is kind of what I would call a Shopify for nonprofits. So if you look at all of your different all of your different fundraising channels.
Yeah.
And for me, I say you think of them like product lines, right?
Yeah.
So if I can sell a camera on Amazon and eBay and they have the same features, and it's a complex thing, a camera, you know, it has a lot of different things that you want to talk about, then, you know, a nonprofit should be thinking about how, when they productize or when they look at the way they want people to invest in their nonprofit, what are all the parts and all the boxes they want to check, and how can they more seamlessly and streamline ways share that? Now, I know that's the start of a conversation, not the end of it.
Yeah.
But I think making that streamlined and easy would allow nonprofits to be more successful and hopefully make it so that they're not sitting there trying to choose where to dip their toe in with so much technological change going on out there.
Yeah, help me sort of connect the dots on where the idea is with see if this can help me sort of get, because I think I'm following, but I also want to sort of offer some of my the one of the distinctions that I made in my first book. I drew the line in the sand between two types of gifts. I said there's the initial gift and there's the subsequent gift, and there's really nothing else. Has nothing to do with the size of the gift. You don't have to attach any particular meaning, but basically there's the first gift. And generally speaking, we acquire as in the nonprofit sector, that first gift in a particular set of, with a particular set of challenges, usually use a high volume, relatively efficient sort of channel to get it. Right now, it looks a lot like online. When I came into this, and perhaps when you did as well, it was a lot of direct mail. it's constantly evolving. And then all those subsequent gifts tends to require more high context. It requires more meaning. It requires, that's where we start to lean on more of the relationship type of conversation. So when you talk about this platform you're talking about, are we securing those initial gifts or are we renewing the subsequent gifts?
So I think that's a great question. I think these are usually going to be initial gifts.
Yeah. Okay.
They may be a continued channel, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
So there may be, and the way I look at it is sometimes individuals will only give through a financial advisor. Other times individuals will only give through their company platform, sometimes because of a match, but maybe it's just how their habit is formed. I think if I'm honest, in most cases, companies would like their employees to be that way, but currently they're not.
Yeah.
And I think that's because there's not a ton of great content, and it's because of this heavy lift. It's not the best place to build a relationship with causes you care about. So I think corporations are interested in making that more robust, but the only way for them to do that is to do it on the backs of nonprofit content builders, right?
Yeah.
And so that's the other side of it to me.
Have you necessarily figured the idea out? Am I sort of pulling back the onion here, or are you sort of still in exploratory mode on what this thing, we'll call it a gadget right now, a gizmo or whatever. Is it actually there or?
No. So right now it's not there. I mean, I've attacked it from a couple different ways and.
So I can be part of the exploratory conversation at this point.
Completely, yes.
Okay, yeah, good. Because I've got a thought for you. Okay, finish that thought you were having.
Well, yeah. So you know, when I came to this idea, that's one of the reasons why I joined the crew over at Amply for a while was that I thought the thing I know is I know fundraising fairly well, and I know matching gifts really well, and I know workplace giving really well. And so I helped them build out software to kind of bring a lot of that data into one place, right?
Yeah.
So matching the company name, matching the employee together, and making that processing piece simpler with the idea of at some point entering into a place where, hey, you could also upload content here or however. What we ran into is that it was hard that through the matching gift portal, we weren't going to be it was hard to get like jumped to a marketing piece. Like it was like, let's be efficient and effective on matching.
Yeah.
And the marketing's great. It's probably not the the number one thing people are coming to us for. Right.
Yeah.
In addition to that, we talked to a lot of the providers in the space, like YourCause and Benevity. And they said, well, we don't know if our corporate partners want us to make this wide open. You know, they kind of want to select the groups that they engage with, the people they want them to build content on their place, et cetera. So that's where a lot of the kind of friction was, I think, in the system that continues to kind of like make corporate partnerships and corporate technology difficult.
So first idea that comes to mind. So I'm very familiar with Donor Choose, for example, what they do for mm-hmm. the schools, you know, a platform where a teacher can post, you know, I need X for my classroom of third grade students. And, you know, I can go on there and I can find that. I can be in the Atlanta area and I can fund it. And that seems to be sort of a particularly impressive in my mind sort of concept at a conceptual level. But something that also that comes to mind that I thought maybe we could sort of play around with your concept. Peter Teague, in his book, Zero to One, talks about technology sort of playing these either competitive or complementary sort of relationships with human beings in our work. And it also makes me wonder if you took your idea and you started to focus on the subsequent gift more. I think we're always, it would seem to me you're going to be in the competitive space. Whatever this thing, whatever your gadget ends up ever being, it would seem to me like if you stay in the new acquisition, the initial gift sort of zone, you're going to be very competitive with everyone else out there who's trying to invent the latest technology to acquire that initial gift. I think that's a very heavily, you know, occupied sort of space, but I don't think anybody has actually figured out how to maintain that relationship once that relationship's already there and use technology as sort of the channel to do it. I'm thinking about what I do with LinkedIn, for example, and you've been a part of this. So I use LinkedIn to make the connection with a guy like you. And then I use that chat box on my cell phone in my LinkedIn app to basically maintain a relationship with you that keeps going. And like you and I may continue to communicate through that particular LinkedIn app multiple times, and it'll keep a thread of conversation going. And so, for example, we've stepped out into another technology format. We're using that, you know, this for the podcast. But it kind of makes me wonder if on that subsequent side, what do you think about that?
I think it's a good idea, and it's one of the things that I think for any of
this. I want to cut if you figure this out. So,
Well, it's that pain point, right? Because we can talk about it in a lot of ways. Right?
Yeah.
You could really insert any sort of gatekeeper technology into the fold, right? You could say it's a corporation software where they're like, well, we don't know if we can share our employees' data with you in a seamless or easy way for you to then step up and take that next gift ask, or for you to take it to the second level. It's the Facebook gift that comes in that, you know, someone's come in and it's not really clear about whether you're going to be able to build a relationship with that donor, or if they were, you know, how they were coming to you. So I think this is where, you know, figuring out a way to convince all of our stakeholders that we need that data as nonprofits, right? That we need to be able to follow up.
Is the okay? Going back to my initial gift and subsequent gift framework. When you call a gift a corporate gift, in my mind, I think that corporate gift can be defined as a corporate gift as long as it's in that initial gift box. But once you move into the subsequent gift sort of category, isn't it true to say that whether it comes from a corporation, from an individual, from a large foundation, they're basically all the same types of gifts? And so
I often feel that way about them.
Yeah,
I feel
you're still just stewarding a relationship with Bill. It doesn't really matter if you're a foundation, if you're the officer at the foundation, if you're the CEO of AT&T, or if you're a really wealthy individual donor on the right side.
The benefit of the donor changes, the way you report out on a gift changes. But there is a lot of play between if you treat a corporation really well and inform them and educate them about your work, there's a better chance you're going to receive that second gift.
Yeah. Yeah. And I even think about a former major donor of mine with a previous employer. He used to he always compared the work that I did as a major gift officer to I think in the banking world, it's called private banking, and it's those high touch relationships that are not the retail relationships that you have with the teller when you go into the counter, you know, to make a deposit at the local bank. But it's the individual who has an office in the back, who is almost like one of a team of 10 or 12 major gift officers at a university who manages, you know, 125 banking clients. And, you know, he'll take your deposit, but he or she will also, you know, make portfolio decisions for you and so forth. You know, it's real high touch.
Right. And I think that's what ends up happening. And you end up having a bit of a dual relationship with corporations where you're saying, this is my decision maker, but then, you know, the things I'm going to have to deliver are going to be slightly different. But I don't think that's any different than, say, a family foundation where they come together and, you know, you have, if you've read The Room correctly, you know, you have the main decision maker, but then you're going to have input and stakeholders across that foundation.
Yeah.
So I know a lot of people like to separate them out, but you are using the same type of customer service to them. Yeah. So
it also occurs to me, we got to reach out to our guys at Virtuous. And one of the critiques I've always had about the CRM platforms is I always think that they're very vertical in the sense that they drill down into transactions, but they don't work very horizontally out into sort of a portfolio of relationships. So if you get a company, you know, get one of these companies like Virtuous or Bloomerang or one of these other guys who basically get the idea that we need to be more kind of like the old school moves management conversation we used to have. It's the idea of moving horizontally into a relationship and not having the technology so focused just on the individual transaction and drilling down into each transaction for specifics like the date and the size of the gift and, you know, what the name of your damn dog is or whatever. I want to know, especially from a supervisory standpoint, I've never been satisfied with that. If I was a supervisor of 10 or 12 major gift officers, I want to know where those relationships are going. You know, I don't care about any one single transaction. I want to know that there's six more of them sort of out on the horizon somewhere.
Right. And there's that lifetime of giving. And that was whether it was at Habitat or American Red Cross, one of my more frustrating things was, corporate fundraisers and individual fundraisers would come to me and say, hey, where's the data on, has this, you know, board member's gift been matched yet? Is it in the hopper? Can I count it? Who does this guy work for? Or who's the company that has the most employees that support us so I can go target that company for a gift for an event we're coming up? And those were all questions that I really couldn't answer very well because the data was so difficult to pull together from the corporate pages. And rightfully so, our check processing group on the back end were like, no, Bill, we're just going to get this check in the bank. Thank you very much. And any donor detail you want to enter into the system, you can do that. It's a lot of manual entry, and that, you know, that was one of that's one of the great things about Amply. We try to lift up that information and divide all the individuals that requested matches, not just ones who received them, but requested and shared their company, so that you can see them and use that data to kind of reach in and go, well, maybe this is somebody I should call on for a sponsorship this year because they have 100 employees that support our cause.
So, Bill, help me out here. I always promise my guest a curveball about 20 minutes in. Help me understand who Bill is and why all this matters to you. Is this because you want? Is this because you're a real high tech guy and you want to invent sort of the game changing technology, or is this because if you made a mistake in the past where you've really dropped the ball on some of these relationships and you need something to sort of what's the backstory here?
Yeah, so I'm one of the only people, probably. There's a handful of people who've done this and probably looked at the process of all this. And I just saw, so when I was at Habitat for Humanity, I walked the back line of the check processing process. And I said, okay, tell me why this is difficult, how this is hard, what's going on with these gifts, and why we don't know which channels we're getting this money from. You know, is it a traditional, you know, how are these things coming in? Without that data, I don't know that I can successfully say this is how we should push a campaign forward, right? Because I don't really know the buttons to press to bring more people on. And similarly, at the American Red Cross, I walked through the shared service centers. How do we credit these things? How do we get these things going? Who do we go back to? And what I realized, a ton of time wasted, a ton of inefficiencies, and a lot of it was because the different stakeholders, whether it's the technology provider, the company, the CRM system that we're using, had all these things where data would take a while to get into the right place, and then you couldn't capitalize on it.
Yeah.
What
would be that key? Okay, so who's, is it the gift officer? Is it the relationship keeper who's most looking for that information, or is this an oversight sort of supervisory sort of function that you're thinking of? And then what data point am I most looking for here? If I'm Habitat, and you got lots of Habitat, certainly down in the Southeast, Whose problem were you trying to solve as you were walking around there trying to solve that?
So initially it was the day-to-day work of the gift processor themselves. Then it was, how do we get that data into the hands of the fundraisers to make it effective?
Okay.
And so for me, and I often tell people about this around matching gifts, they're nice to have, but like you said, you should focus on the second gift, the third gift, and how it's down the road. And so to me, the way I set this up with gift officers, I say, okay, if you have someone at $1,000 gift and you're trying to break the ice into a different level of giving, this is a way that they can do that. You can help them understand that. But you can only understand that if you know which company they work with, and I get you that information in a timely manner.
Yeah.
And then the next year I would say, maybe you should be cultivating them so that you're doubling that gift. I mean, a lot of people ask for challenge grants and step up programs. And I'm saying, well, if you use this right and you identify the data right, then you can use this as a step up program. In addition to that, I coach corporate fundraisers to say, if we can pull this data out for you at a level, then you've identified a bank president or a VP or however that can then start making real decisions about sending funding your way.
Somebody's gonna listen to this and capitalize on it. You and I are gonna need to make sure we pass this around, and because I think we might be. I like to think that I'm a pretty sharp guy, and you sound like you know what you're talking about. Okay, here's a thought for you. And I've never thought about it this way, but is some of the data? So when I was a gift officer, and here's the way I'll ask the question: when I was a gift officer in Washington D.C., my boss and I figured out that essentially our processes were flooding me with way too much information before I got the meeting scheduled for the first time. So I was getting flooded with, I'm sure we were using Blackbaud or somebody's well screening sort of software. And what was happening is I was getting boggled down with too much quantitative, how much money can we raise type information. And I wasn't being it was all about the numbers, like how much money can I get out of this donor and how much money.
You weren't building relationships.
And And so you almost got me thinking, if there's a way to shield the development officer from all of that data that he or she can't really usually do a whole lot with for that initial gift. It's usually not the place where those gifts come alive. Usually those initial gifts are an opportunity to build trust and perhaps demonstrate an ability to acknowledge the gift appropriately and then move to the second gift. That's when that where the promise is, where all the possibility is. But when you bog me down as a gift officer and you tell me this person's worth millions upon millions or billions of dollars, I almost set myself up for disaster because I'm scared to death that I can't connect with this woman or this fella in the right way. It's too much. It's intimidating.
Well, and you end up leaning into the wrong things, right?
You draw all kinds of stupid assumptions. You end up, remember meeting with donors. I remember this, my Danielle was my boss. So we go up to, and I've told this story here before. We go up to to New York City. We're in this, husband and wife penthouse apartment, Fifth Avenue sort of place, and overlooking, beautiful part of Midtown.
You needed the data.
What we figured out, we go and do this wonderful presentation that we had prepared for probably 3 weeks. And the first thing the fella says is, hey, why don't you guys chill out and sit back? Cause we were all stiff, sitting in our chairs, we couldn't lean back in his couch. And he said, why don't you guys chill out and enjoy being here? I welcomed you into my home. I know this is a hard part of the job, and he just basically told us to relax.
Good for him.
And in some ways I think that's what some of the data does, is it doesn't help us relax, and being able to just chill out for that first engagement is particularly important.
For me, I think this is definitely like what I'm talking about is probably more of a mid-tier strategy to step people up. Yeah. Also, the release valve, right? Because to me, you're talking to people. Let's say you're taking somebody from like a $250 gift or something up to a $1,000 gift, and they're kind of figuring out how to get there, how they want to be there. This is a really nice release valve that gets you to celebrate them, get them into a level of seeing themselves as an investor in your cause at a dollar amount that is a little more than what they came in at, or a lot more potentially, and then building them up to the next thing. And, you know, I think if you break these paths down, you know what, some of these people are going to come to you and they're going to have the potential of your midtown Manhattan apartment, and that would be great. Some of these people are going to be like, yes, lifetime supporter, always doing the extra bit of work to get the sweetness in on the matching gift. But what I know is that this person is going to spend money on me and the time to get these extra bits done. And then I think they're set up for a planned gift after that, because I think this is the person that is, these are your fundraising foot soldiers in some ways, that they're going to give you gifts for the lifetime, right?
Yeah.
And giving them more things to do as a touch point. And now for the wealthier people, I'd say this is your concierge opportunity. You go, look, you know, you're actually like a $10,000 donor. Maybe you're looking at $100,000, over a 3-year period or however. I'm just going to take care of some of this paperwork on the back end for you if possible. You're going to get an email from this company we use. Just press and complete the steps. So if you, just call me on the phone if you want me to walk you through it. If it's not worth your time, you know, for an additional $5,000, I understand that as well. But I want you to know I'm here for you.
You got to listen to. So I had a guest on here right before. Her name's Sammy Zoss, I think is her name. Sammy. She's in. She's a concierge. I think she used the same word you just used. She works for a private university out in on the Western Ohio, and she described her job description as having a portfolio of say 100. She's basically a stewardship officer. So she's working on those upgrades. She's working on stewarding existing relationships, but she's also looking for creative ways to engage, you know, very personalized sort of stewardship strategies. And a lot of the conversation we had, I want to say this was one of the last episodes we did in 2020, was about how the work of a gift office, a traditional, you know, active, aggressively soliciting type gift officer was going to very soon morph into a high touch stewardship type officer who's basically just has to know, similar to what the advice was with that gentleman up in New York, how to sit back on that couch and enjoy just being there.
Right.
And she described, I remember the conversation we had, she describes a particular donor who was really into Abe Lincoln. I think there was some connection with Abe Lincoln. And so she was actually at the time, she tells a story there on the podcast about how she, facilitated some sort of, very specific and very customized sort of concierge sort of experience that tied his giving and the school to the history of Abraham Lincoln or something.
Oh, that's very cool.
Yeah. And it'd be interesting. And that's the qualitative data that's out there and probably doesn't come through the traditional sort of financial, you know, wealth screening data. It's qualitative information about what do we know about Jason or Bill that perhaps doesn't show up in the traditional run-of-the-mill data, you know, well-screen type outputs.
Yeah, and along those lines for corporations, I've had conversations. I worked in New Orleans after Hurricane Katrina at that United Way for a while. And I've had conversations about with a couple of corporate partners that love New Orleans, loved going down there to do the build, didn't have employees or offices or all these other things that you think you need to land a corporate gift down there. But one of their key decision makers in their foundation had a passion for New Orleans from that experience and wanted to do some volunteering around the anniversaries And at that time, I didn't live in New Orleans, but they weren't in New Orleans, but they wanted to do that volunteering. And so we were able to get a larger gift out of them because, you know, the connection there. And I think there's a lot of, especially during COVID, there's a lot of people who have a passion for a place and a thing that may be willing to support your cause or support your efforts because of the, you know, because of the additional things you can bring around it, not necessarily just simply because of your cause. Like, and in that case, I was thinking about, you know, I was talking with the Habitat affiliate down there, and I said, guys, you know, all the people who can't come down and build because of COVID, I know they love building with you, but also love the music. And they would love if you ship them a hurricane mix and a box of beignet mix and got them on a Zoom call to listen to Kermit Ruffin's play and cultivate them from there. So sometimes, especially nowadays, if you're doing something virtual, you have to be creative and make a connection that may go like the Lincoln example you shared.
Our sponsor here on the podcast, QBAC, it works in higher ed, and I want to say that they help on the more qualitative data screening sort of level. I'll ping Arnie Papp is the founder and chief CEO at QBAC. And I suspect there's probably something very similar in what their platform does that perhaps is very similar to what you and I are sort of envisioning here. You've got me thinking, if there's somebody, I've had your attention, Bill, for more than about 30 minutes, and we usually lose our listeners at about this point. If somebody's enjoyed our conversation and they're thinking, hey, I want to contribute to this, this brain think, how would you suggest that they reach out to you?
You know, great just to connect with me on LinkedIn. If you want to learn more about kind of some of the projects I'm working on now, definitely check out Amply at giveamply.com and check out what Salesforce is doing in the CSR space. Just Google Philanthropy Cloud and you'll see what they're doing to help connect companies to great volunteer opportunities and the work of United Way.
Bill, it has certainly been a pleasure. You're always welcome back. All you got to do is have a big idea or bold opinion, and we'll get you back on the schedule. Thanks for being my guest today.
Thank you, Jason. It was my pleasure.
Have you read the book that nonprofit leaders and fundraising professionals alike are calling a must read? In this pocket manifesto for today's fundraising professional, Jason deconstructs why many of us find ourselves working for organizations where we cannot accomplish our goals. These same organizations are notorious for rapid turnover and high donor attrition. To avoid this all too familiar path, Jason offers direction from those who want to be recognized and admired for their work. The war for fundraising talent challenges our ingrained beliefs and assumptions about how effective fundraising really works, and it questions the prevailing wisdom hiring decisions and donor behavior. Published by Gatekeepers Press, The War for Fundraising Talent is now available on Amazon and other major retailers. We want to thank you for listening to today's episode of the Fundraising Talent Podcast. We hope you enjoyed today's show and hope you will come back for next week's interview, where we will discuss with those on the front line who are defining what it means to be a fundraising professional. If you'd like to be a guest on the Fundraising Talent Podcast, visit our Facebook page or email Jason at jason@lewisfundraising.com. In your email, be sure to tell us about where you work and why you believe you would be a great addition to the upcoming lineup. Thank you again for joining us today, and we look forward to you being a part of the continuing conversation as we shape how the nonprofit sector thinks about fundraising talent.